It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's been a year since the first case of COVID-19 was discovered in the U.S. The novel virus upended almost every aspect of daily life, notably forcing many to rely on government support to stay housed, get health care, and put food on the table. But despite this increase in need, Pennsylvania saw a decrease in the state's welfare program. WESA's Kate Giamarisi has been reporting on this. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Kevin.
So, Kate, how much has enrollment in temporary assistance to needy families, the state's welfare program, decreased in the Commonwealth?
Well, Kevin, in March of last year, there were more than 94,000 people statewide enrolled in the program. And as of November, which are the most recent numbers we have, there were fewer than 79,000. So enrollment during that time declined by more than 15,000 people.
On the surface, that sounds shocking that there was such great need and yet a drop in the number of people on welfare.
Right. I mean, during this same time period, enrollment in Medicaid and the medical assistance program increased by more than 10%, and enrollment in the food stamp program went up by more than 5% during that same time. So we know this has been a time of economic hardship for a lot of Pennsylvanians. We know there is increased hunger and food insecurity, and we know many people are still out of work.
Do you know in your reporting, in your research, how Pennsylvania compares to other states?
In about half of the states where data is available, Pennsylvania had among the steepest caseload declines since the start of the pandemic.
So it's not unusual. It was not only Pennsylvania had the decline. It had the steepest decline.
Among the steepest.
You spoke with advocates for your reporting who said the state's program is simply too restrictive. How so?
So the folks I spoke to had a number of theories as to why there are fewer people getting help from this program. And one point that they made is there's a limited number of people who can apply to get help from TANF. You have to have minor children, and you have to have basically exhausted all your resources by the time you apply. You can't have more than $1,000 in assets, with some very limited exceptions. So if you are employed at all or collecting unemployment, you would not qualify for this program. Another theory that folks offered, you would get roughly $400 a month for a family of three. And the hoops that you would have to jump through in terms of paperwork and such is just not worth it for that amount of money. But, you know, overall, the advocates I spoke to made the point that if we're trying to help needy families, then during this time when there are more people in need, but the program is helping fewer people, something is wrong, that, you know, the program is not working.
What state agency oversees this program and therefore the funding?
So the program is administered in Pennsylvania by the Department of Human Services, but I believe that the funds are mostly or entirely federal funds. And the state gets a set amount of money every year from the federal government for this program. And because of the welfare reforms that were passed in the 1990s, the amount of money that the state gets is called a block grant. And that means it is the same amount of money regardless of the economy. So the state does not get more money for this program in a bad economy when people would presumably be needing more help.
Kate, finally, is there any inclination to change the criteria so more people qualify for aid, whether it's the Secretary of Health and Human Services or some prominent state lawmakers?
The folks at the state I spoke to have said they are working to make improvements to the program, but those are more focused on the employment and training aspects that are part of the program. So the goal of that is to help people find better paying jobs. That's sort of been where they have focused their work and their, you know, aiming at improvements. They have not really actively tried to get people to apply for the program, although the state really has been highlighting the supports that are available through Medicaid and food stamps. I should also say that there is a longer term trend here of enrollment in this program falling, and that trend has been ongoing for several decades. You know, there were more than 200,000 Pennsylvanians in this program a decade ago. So we have really seen a steady decline in the number of people enrolled.
WESA reporter Kate Giamarisi. Thanks so much, Kate.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh Public Schools now plans to begin to phase students back to in-person learning on February 8th. The district had said students and staff might return this month. Teachers are to return to their classrooms February 1st. Most students in the Pittsburgh region have been attending school from home since March. For high school students, that means missing out on important milestones or experiencing them virtually instead of with friends and teachers. So how do some of those students feel about the potential for finishing another year online? Madison Young is a senior at Brashear High School. Madison, thanks for being with us.
Hi. And, thanks for having me.
And Chelsea Perello is also a senior at Brashear High School. Chelsea, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
So how is virtual school going for both of you? Do you feel like you're learning as much as you should? Madison, we'll start with you.
I, per se, haven't had the worst time, but it's hard to really retain the information that we're being taught without teachers being right there and being able to reach out to them more easily.
Mm-hmm. That quick interaction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chelsea, what about you?
I feel like it's something you have to get like used to, especially if you've been in school since like day one. It's not too difficult for me. I've opened up to the fact that I don't know if we're going to be going back for our senior year.
We've talked to some experts, if you would, and they are concerned about the mental well-being of students who are used to that socialization with classmates in school, but maybe not getting it when you're learning virtually, when you're learning online. Has it been stressful for either or both of you, Chelsea?
Yes. I know that personally, sometimes kids do not want to be in the house all the time. You don't know their situation. You know what I mean?
Right.
And some kids personally just want to get out of the house, interact with people, and it's better on their mental health and mental state. And being cooped in the house and nothing to do is really not okay. And it has like everything to do with the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Madison?
I'm very vocal about, well, I've recently become very vocal about my depression and anxiety. And a lot of it has become a lot worse because of the pandemic and staying in the house and not seeing all my friends in school.
I understand both of you are applying for colleges to attend next fall. Madison, I believe you're hoping to possibly go to the University of Southern California or maybe Temple. How's the pandemic been affecting those future plans, which really aren't that far off?
It's extremely scary. Not being in school has made it harder to understand some of the senior things about applying to college. Like, I've had to really reach out to my counselor a lot instead of usual years. They'll be there and they'll like come into your classroom and like ask you about things, but instead I have to remember to email them and like not have that firsthand help on applications.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, what about you? Is the pandemic affecting your decision or the process of applying for college after graduation?
So it's kind of confusing because I set up like several college visits, but they keep getting canceled because the virus and they keep pushing it back. So, and that's affecting my decision. I'd rather get it out of the way sooner than later to know like my future.
Chelsea, what about you in the pandemic? You have a job. How has doing school online affected your job? Has it?
So when we got junior year cut short, I had to go down to Shop and Save because my job got closed down because of the pandemic for 3 months. So it was kind of like iffy there. It's different from like this year because last year we got to do the work whenever we felt like it. But this year, it's like, we don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still affecting my job a little bit with timing.
Madison, you told our producer, Laura Satsui, that you're a cheer captain this year. Been able to practice and cheer at games?
We did get our football season, but we didn't start practicing until a lot later than we usually do. We usually practice all summer from spring to summer into fall. Mm-hmm. And we had like 3 games, and like our last game got rained out, so that was cut short.
We know the pandemic has been hard on both of you as students, but also, let's face it, hard on adults in your lives. Do you feel like you've had to grow up really quickly in order to process what's going on? Madison, we'll start with you.
I feel like I have. In the past months, I've realized so much, not only about being an adult, but other events in the country. I feel like I've just been so in tune with the media and the pandemic, and I just want to go to college. I'm kind of over high school and being in this area of life.
Chelsea?
Yes, it made me feel like I had to grow up a little bit faster, just like financial wise and like money wise, because during this whole pandemic, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep my job or not. Like, at any minute, we could close down again. Just seeing, like, everything that's going on right now is, like, making me feel like I have to grow up and, like, not be a, I don't know, I want to say not be a teenager, but get more involved in, like, what's actually happening, because I'm going to be grown with my own family one day and seeing what's happening in the world.
To both of you, what's it feel like to be missing some of the milestones, whether they're done virtually, but I mean missing the in-person milestones, whether it's homecoming, graduation, senior activity, even senior pranks, just for the fun, that socialization. What's it mean to miss some of those things, Chelsea?
I feel like I'm just missing out on my high school experience. I mean, I know I had 9th and 10th grade and half a junior year, but for me, junior year was very interesting, and I felt like senior year was going to be a big impact on my life, making memories with, like, the students, the teachers. You don't really have that. And, like, we have this thing in Brashear where we put our hand up on the wall with paint, right, and, like, a little quote. And I don't think we're getting to do that this year like every other senior did last year or the year before. And, like, that's, like, a little legacy. And that's something I actually really would enjoy.
Mm. Madison?
Whenever we left junior year, I was very unsatisfied. I was having, like, a great year, and then everything got cut short. And then it kind of feels like all of our hard work was for nothing in a way.
Mm. Do you expect to get back in the classroom before you actually graduate? Chelsea?
To be honest, no, I do not. Mm-hmm. And that's because just like junior year, they kept saying 2 weeks and then another 2 weeks to a couple months to not going back. I just feel like they're going to keep pushing it back. And it's sad to say I don't have no hope anymore for that. And right. I just want to graduate and move on.
Mm-hmm. You think they're just, but I mean, the primary concern is obviously the health and safety of everyone, teachers, staff, and of course,
yes, exactly.
Students. And Madison?
I also don't really see us going back. Just like Chelsea said, the pushback of the dates has just kind of made me lose hope. And I understand about the pandemic, and I'm not entirely upset about their decisions, but it's just like, personally, it's just sad to not have what I was expecting whenever I went to Brashear freshman year.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea Perello and Madison Young are both seniors at Brashear High School. Thanks so much for talking to us, and good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Given the upheaval in the 2020 election cycle, voting reforms are expected to be at the top of state lawmakers' agenda this year. But as WITF's Emily Previty reports, stakeholders worry the partisan gridlock that prevented changes before the last election will be even harder to overcome in 2021.
In recent interviews, election directors across the state discussed which election reforms should get top priority and challenges to getting them into practice. Two things kept coming up. Any change will have to overcome partisan gridlock, and the most pressing is to allow ballot processing to begin before Election Day, like in most other states. Keith Button, who's handled election matters since 2015 as solicitor for Crawford County, explains.
Counties are going to be pushing to start doing the pre-canvassing earlier than Election Day so that those votes can be counted earlier and they can focus on running the in-person election on Election Day, and also so everybody can get their results out faster.
Election directors pushed for earlier ballot processing last year to no avail. State lawmakers also considered other policies raised by election directors this past week, and last year for that matter, but didn't actually change the law. Some issues went to court, further straining relationships among Republican legislative leaders and Governor Tom Wolf's administration. And that was before the last election. Pat Christmas is policy director for nonpartisan good government group, the Committee of 70, and sits on Pennsylvania's Election Law Advisory Board.
With the current political climate, both in Pennsylvania and nationally, there's just a lot of not just unhelpful, but damaging rhetoric to how we run elections. Until that cools down and fades away, it's going to remain very challenging to have a grounded discussion about what the real issues are.
In addition to post-election litigation and disinformation amplified by the outgoing president and his supporters, 67 Republican state legislators signed letters urging Congress to either object to or delay Pennsylvania's electoral vote certification. This broader effort to overturn the election results culminated in the insurrection January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. County officials say those events and the ensuing toxic political environment will make it even harder to overcome the gridlock that could prevent progress. And they shared another sentiment that wasn't new.
Counties and the election directors are going to remain under a great deal of strain to execute elections.
The Department of State and House State Government Committee are scheduled for a hearing Thursday focused on the last election and how to move forward. Pennsylvania's primary is May 18th. Emily Previty, WITF News.
We should clarify that county elections officials are not asking to count the mail-in ballots prior to the close of the polls, but that they be allowed at least 3 days before Election Day to pre-canvass and unfold those ballots so that there is no delay in counting the ballots on election night. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.